Welcome to ITE 1, Class 2, Module 3. This is going to be a step-by-step walkthrough of how we put together a computer. First, we're going to talk about the ideal working environment. Sometimes we can't control our working environment as much as we'd like to, so these suggestions are suggestions. You want to try and get as many of these as you can. If you can't, that's okay. And you just keep going. Remember that computer cases are produced in a variety of form factors. Form factors refer to the size and shape of the case, power supply, and motherboard. So we want to prepare the workspace before opening the computer case. The ideal workspace, as I said, should have adequate lighting and good ventilation and a comfortable room temperature. You also want to have the workbench or table be accessible from all sides. Now, this is where I'm saying ideal, because I don't think I've ever worked in a place where I have been able to access the workbench or table from all sides. Avoid cluttering the surface with tools and computer components. You will want an anti-static mat on the table to help prevent physical and ESD damage to equipment. if you don't have one, this is okay. You can still open up your computer. You definitely want to, highly, highly recommended, wear an anti-static wrist strap. You can get those online. Price Watch, you can probably get them at, or I'm sure Best Buy sells them, but you'll probably pay a little bit. Get a small container or containers to hold U-screw or other small parts as they are being removed. And you want to count them as you remove them. And if you are using taking screws from multiple places, you'll want to keep track of where they come from and possibly put them in different containers for the different parts. Don't put them in your pockets. You'll forget which pocket you put them in. Go ahead.
One thing that works really well, and probably shouldn't do this, but if you those little things at restaurants where they have like the little those little ramekin things, those hold screws very nicely if you happen to get a hold of a few of those.
Which things?
Those little, like when you, like if you're at a restaurant, it's one of those little things where they give you ketchup and it's a small, it looks like a little bit like a bowl. Get one of those to run it through your dishwasher, get a few of those, and they hold screws really well.
The little red lobster drawn butter cups that they give you with your lobster, those are really good too.
may I just suggest?
See, and the only reason I know this is because they gave me one as a takeaway to take home because I had drawn butter left. I did not steal the red lobster cup.
You obviously run it through and make sure it's clean.
Yeah.
Can I just suggest you just use like a normal glass at home? Like just get a normal plastic cup or children's training mugs or, even a regular cereal bowl or a quarter plate. Or, I mean, you know, these takeaway restaurants might not be too common if we don't have any red lobster over here.
They also sell screw organizers. Another really good one, and these have labels on them for Braille, so if you can remember which little compartment you stuck it in, get a Pill Pal. Those are good. $5-$10 at Walgreens. Awesome. So when we open a case, there are different methods to open the case. To learn how to open your case, consult the user's manual or manufacturer's website. I'll be saying that a lot. Some of the methods that can be used are the cover of the case may be removed as one piece. So you've got this big cover and screws around the entire cover. You take off all of the screws and you pull off the cover and it comes with both of the sides.
Oh, we had a fun go at this once. We had a friend of ours who thought he was really hot shot at computers, and we dropped off his computer to him in Brisbane. We won't name him on here, and we basically put the computer in front of him, handed him a screwdriver, and said, "Right, get it open." 20 minutes later, by the time he had stopped sort of screaming the house down and getting rather upset, we wandered back in and said, "Well, Mr. X, you lift the front off like this, and the screws are in the front." And he was not a happy camper, although he certainly got wound up about it. So there's always a surprise out there for you. So just because you see a computer, don't assume that you'll know how to get it apart.
Actually, I've seen cases from Dell that actually are completely screwless. They just like pull on a couple of levers and the top just sort of lifts up like Pac-Man.
Yeah, no, that really threw me off.
Yeah, the screwless ones that are supposed to be easy can be the hardest ones to open.
I spent like 5 minutes looking for the screws and like, wait a minute.
Once I figured out how to do it, it was really easy.
Absolutely. I'm a big advocate for thumb screws, though. On cases, at least. Really, really good.
Yes, thumb screws are fantastic. I have thumb screws for everything. I have thumb screws on my side panels, and I have thumb screws on my power supply.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just had the item, another.
So another method is the top and side panels of the case may be removed. That's usually a lot of cases are built that way at the moment. Unless they're the screwless type. Another one is the top case of the case may need to be removed before the side panels can be removed. This is always fun. It's a jigsaw puzzle. I hate these type of cases. I really do. Okay. Now that we've opened up the empty case, we get to install the power supply. Some of these parts that we're talking about today, actually all of them, are called FSUs, FRUs, I'm sorry, field serviceable or field replaceable units. This means that you don't have...
Which means it's FRU.
FRU. Heard both terms. This means that you can replace them in the field. You don't need to go buy a new computer. You can get these components and stick them in. No need to go back to a factory. You, as a technician or advanced user, can replace or service these parts. So most power supplies can only fit one way in a computer case. Power supplies have fans that can vibrate and loosen screws that are not secured, so you want to tighten down the screws pretty well while not over-tightening them. To install a power supply, insert the power supply into the case, align the holes in the power supply with the holes in the case, and secure the power supply to the case using the proper screws. Now, if you don't get the holes lined up on the first try, don't feel too bad. Lining up screw holes can be harder than it looks sometimes. You just need to try again, and you will eventually get it right. You have a lab at this point, and it is the Installing the Power Supply lab. And you can refer to the audio labs, or you can actually do it on your own computer. So, we've got some components when actually building a computer that we want to put onto the motherboard before we stick it into the case. Because we don't want the motherboard to accidentally fracture. These are very hard to detect. If the motherboard gets a teeny tiny fracture in it, you can only detect it by x-rays. So, if we put a few of these components on first before we put it into the case, we lessen that chance significantly. The components that we want to put onto the put onto the motherboard before we put it in are the CPU, heatsink, and RAM. That's CPU, heatsink, and RAM. we know it can be installed on there before. CPUs and motherboards are sensitive to electrostatic discharge, so when handling a CPU or motherboard, make sure that you place them on a grounded anti-static mat, if you've got one, or you can use the anti-static bag that the motherboard came in. You should always wear an anti-static wrist strap, as I said. When handling a CPU, try not to touch the CPU contacts. The CPU is secured in the socket on the motherboard with a locking assembly, and they are usually ZIF zero insertion force sockets. You should be familiar with the locking assembly before attempting to install a CPU into the socket on the motherboard. So take a good look at it. Lift the lever up and down, and make sure you know how the locking mechanism works before you put the CPU in, because you do not want to damage the CPU. That is a very expensive chip right there, and you do not want to replace it. When you install a CPU, if the heatsink is not already on it because you had it put on already, you'll need to use thermal compound to keep the CPU cool. It increases the transfer of heat from the CPU to the heatsink, where it can be dissipated. To install a used CPU, you want to clean the top of the of the CPU and the bottom of the heatsink with isopropyl alcohol to get rid of any excess heat paste. Follow the manufacturer's guidelines and recommendations about applying the thermal compound. Now, what I learned when I did mine is not to buy the very cheapest thermal compound. It doesn't do near as good a job and does not keep your CPU as cool as if you buy the, I think it's Quicksilver that I bought for mine. So you don't want to buy the very, very cheap tubes of the heat paste.
Why not? I got this whopping big tube for like $10 at JCar, and it's huge, massive, and there's nothing wrong with it. If it's just a silicon compound, it's okay.
It doesn't cool as well. I got some of the cheaper no-name heat paste, and it did not cool my CPU nearly as well as the more expensive stuff, so I had to bring my computer in, take it apart, because it was more heated than it had more heat to it than recommended. Apply new heat paste, and the expensive stuff bonded to my CPU much better and cooled it better.
Fair enough. Although, keep in mind that most heat sinks actually do come with the heat paste on them if you buy the chip in a box. We were talking about this earlier. If you buy the chip in a box from Intel, you get the recommended cooling solution and the recommended heat sink paste and the CPU. Grace got hers as an OEM part, so she had to bundle the heat sink and fan combo. So I'd recommend people buying box processors in this case, unless you've got a specific reason to go OEM.
Probably a very good idea. If you do have to do your own, or have somebody do it for you, you want a very thin layer over the entirety of the chip. So to actually install the CPU and heatsink, you want to take the CPU and line it up with pin 1 on the slot of the socket of the motherboard. Now there's usually a cutout corner that you can feel to do this, so you can touch the socket before you put it in very gently and feel where that cutout corner is, and line it up with the cutout corner of the CPU. I'd probably have someone check your work, but that's usually about how you do it, and you should be absolutely fine and good to go. But if you don't feel confident enough with that, have a sighted person just look and see that pin 1 lines up. Because if it doesn't, you can hurt your CPU. This heatsink fan assembly is a two-part cooling device. The heatsink draws heat away from the CPU, and the fan moves the heat away from the heatsink. Go ahead.
How does it look like as pin one so that you can tell somebody maybe they're not sure what it looks like? How do they know?
It depends on the CPU. Generally, it's a cutoff corner. Usually has pin one, so you've got three rectangle corners and one cutoff corner, which is usually the one with pin one.
And I think it's a red or black stripe.
The easiest way to tell often is basically if it doesn't go in right, pick it up and turn it around.
But you don't want to do that too many times. You really don't want to. You want to put it down.
That's
only
true.
Once.
I'm just saying, if it doesn't work like immediately upon insertion, don't try to fiddle it.
Yeah, pretty much. But if you feel the corners, you should be absolutely right, and it should go well. If you're not feeling confident, have someone look for the red or black stripes on the corner of the CPU and on the corner of the motherboard. I think it's red. All right. A heatsink has a 3-pin power connector, usually, that you can plug into the power supply, just like any other fan that you've got. So once you've got the CPU and your heat paste applied, you line up the heatsink / fan assembly retainer holes on the motherboard. You place the heatsink and fan assembly onto the CPU socket, being very careful and try not to pinch the CPU fan wires, because if we break those, it won't work. You tighten the retainers to secure the assembly and connect the heatsink fan assembly power cable to the header on the motherboard. Any questions on how to install a heatsink or CPU?
What do they mean by retainers? What do they look like?
Okay, they're these big round things that go into these holes on the motherboard, and you can tighten them up to secure them into place.
That's only with the 775 and the newer stuff. The old stuff actually has a clip that goes from one side of the CPU socket with a U-shaped piece of metal that is spring-loaded, and you actually latch it onto one side of the socket and then push it down on the other side with a screwdriver. So you're assuming modern hardware when you say the four quarter-turn screw-in locks, because it does change with the 478U.
Oh, and oh my goodness, those older ones, I have seen them. They're really hard to get on and off.
The 478 stuff isn't too bad. I'm just trying to remember what it is, but it's got sort of little hooks and stuff that catch on off. Actually, there's one sitting on the desk. We can go over and take a look at that later and see how it does it. But it does vary, and the AMD stuff is different again. So just be aware that you are going to see differences between all the sockets.
Any other questions before we go on to the RAM? Heat paste?
Bottom of the heat sink.
The heat paste, yes.
Just from the tube, you don't use anything to spread it?
Okay, I've never heard anyone.
You can actually do it with your hand. Generally, you just squeeze it out gently with the tube, and then you generally use your fingers gently to actually spread it out, but it's an absolute cow to wash off your fingers.
The person who was helping me with mine used a razor blade, of all things.
The
but I wouldn't recommend that.
Had a little spready thing with it.
Yeah.
So it feels like super glue?
They do actually come. Some of them do come with a spready thing. looks like a little paddle pop stick or something. But yeah, it's interesting.
It's
and that is the official company term, the spready thing.
Oh yeah, exactly, spready stick. You don't want to use your fingers too much if you can help it. At least this was what I was told, because you can get little bits of fingerprint with the heat paste, and yes, it's very hard to wash off your fingers.
Well, I think it depends. I mean, we've got to draw a line here between whether you work... I mean, generally, you wouldn't be doing bench tech hardware work as a blind person for a company. They wouldn't let you. Generally, you'd be doing it for yourself at home, and you've got to ask yourself which things are you allowed to actually take a bit of liberty on. And if you're putting your own machine together, you can take a bit of liberty on your own gear that you wouldn't take in a professional environment. So that's something to be aware of.
I think at this stage I'd probably borrow a sighted person for a little bit and have them help me with the heat paste because, and the CPU, just because I would want to make sure that's right. And it's a very expensive chip. So that's just me. If you feel comfortable doing it, awesome. So let's see who's awake. Anyone remember what RAM does?
Yeah, I mean, I've done it before, and it's doable. It's just, yeah, it's very easy to mess up, and if you do once, game over.
Nobody remembers what RAM does.
Is anybody answering the question?
RAM is the memory that holds programs and stuff. It's your temporary retrieval memory, like they just.
Yeah, it is temporary data storage while the computer is operating. That's absolutely right. And RAM is volatile, just as a reminder, which means the contents are lost when the computer is shut down. Typically, adding more RAM will enhance the performance of your computer. RAM should be installed when you're building the computer before the motherboard is placed in the computer case. If you're upgrading RAM, you're not going to take out the motherboard and put the RAM in and then put the motherboard back in. But if you're building it, while it's out, you can put the RAM in. Well, hey, we do have to specify. Before you install a stick of RAM, consult the motherboard documentation.
True. It's a funny picture.
Yeah, the website manufacturer to ensure the RAM is compatible with the motherboard. You've got some memory testers. I think Crucial and Kingston have some memory testers that are pretty accessible, and they will recommend RAM that you can buy that will be compatible with your motherboard. They don't have any warranty on the accuracy of their information, but they're pretty good.
Another website that does is the number 4 allmemory.com also has a good scan that will tell you here's what's in your computer, here's the max your computer will take, here's how many sticks are in each slot. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Does it tell you the speeds that of RAM?
Yeah, it tells you as much information about that RAM as it can get its little hands on.
Another handy nifty trick, which I didn't know until recently, is that what you can do is you can boot up a live Linux distribution that I love a lot, and I'd marry it, but it really wouldn't do me any good, called GRML, www.grml.org. And if you actually run DMI decode, it will actually dump all of the information on your memory sticks, including their timings, their minimum timings, their recommended timings, and any of the information that's stored in the JEDEC chip that's on the RAM to tell you what the timings and stuff are on it. It'll also tell you what you've got in each bank, so that can be handy. Otherwise, if you're just running Windows, ZCPU will do a lot of that as well.
And Belarc Advisor will give you some information on your RAM.
It won't give timings.
No.
It only tells you what Windows thinks, and that's often wrong.
Okay, to install RAM, align the notches on the RAM modules to the keys in the slot. and press down until the side tabs click into place. You take your fingernail and you run your fingernail as lightly as you can over these over the slot, and you'll be able to feel where that key is and be able to line it up. And this may take you a few goes. One time it was literally 45 minutes for me to get a stick of RAM into a computer. I do not have the best coordination in the entire world, so most of you will probably do a lot better. But you can take that RAM, you line it up, and make sure you've got it lined up with the proper slot, which can be quite a trick. That's what I find it is the trick. Now, if you do have trouble with this, my best solution, and it'll cost you more, is to get RAM with heat spreaders, because this will help you. If you get the ones with the heat spreaders, you've got a lot more to hold on to, and you can more easily line it up with the slot, because you've just got that much more leverage, and I found that that works better for me. Did cost me a little more to get the RAM with the heat spreaders, but it also was good because it keeps the RAM a little bit cooler, and it's easier to install.
Although, sometimes if you get the ones with the big heat spreaders and the actual banks are too close together, they won't fit. So watch how big the heat spreaders you get are.
Go ahead, Amanda.
Go ahead.
What is the advantage of getting the RAM with heat spreaders over the typical... I said, what was the advantage of getting RAM with heat spreaders versus other type?
Besides being a little bit easier to install, it will also keep the RAM cooler and draw the heat from the spreaders. Yeah, go ahead, Carrie, what were you going to say?
We've got an incredible delay here. But I don't think there's anything on the Ventrilo server. The heat spreaders act as a heat sink for the RAM. They're often used by overclocking people who want to run their RAM above its rated specifications. Also, some of the high-speed RAM can get a bit warm, so heat spreaders will tend to pull the heat away from the RAM. But keep that in mind that it won't do you any good unless your case is well cooled. There's no point pulling the heat away from the RAM if it's all just going to collect just above the RAM bank, so make sure you've got sufficient fans and stuff in your case as well.
You're going to hear and feel when the RAM snaps into place, and you'll be able to reach back and feel that the little tabs are locked. So it's a very user-friendly process. You're going to know when that's seated correctly. It clicks, and you can feel that they are no longer spread out.
It's very satisfying.
Yes, it is very satisfying. It's a very satisfying click. And there you go. Then it's time to install your motherboard. You've got plastic and metal standoffs that are used to mount the motherboard. What about a Dell? Why unless it's a Dell?
Mr. Husbury, you're supposed to finish your why if it's not a Dell?
Well, I've had more trouble with those types of computers and putting in RAM for some reason.
Ah, you're talking about general Dell delirium, where like some people have no trouble with a Dell, and everybody else wants to hoik them off the nearest balcony.
I'll tell you what, I have trouble with Dells as well.
I love my Dell.
Some of them are really well built.
December of 2003, and it works great.
Okay, I have one very amazing Dell, or had. It's now probably dead in Denver somewhere, sadly. And 2004, amazing case. This thing actually survived being abused by UPS, and yes, we had to put masking tape on it to hold the case together, but the thing still worked. Let me see. I don't even think I have that installed. Yeah.
Wow.
Hmm. Oh, I know why.
Yeah, it's fun to go sometimes to one of those shipping areas where UPS is and like what they do with the computers and stuff before it gets onto the truck, and you'll never wonder why things look banged up anymore.
Oh yeah, I was so angry, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, cool. Good.
We'll just toss boxes around. They do not.
Oh, it's awful. My Ethernet cable was only halfway plugged in.
That doesn't help.
No. So it's like, I don't even know, some hybrid of weirdness. So now I shouldn't be as delayed. Yeah. No, Dells can be really good or really, really not so good. As with any computer brand. I had an amazing one, and I had one that's motherboard overheated. That was special. Anyway, so why do we use standoffs in a motherboard? Does anybody know?
I'm not even sure what the standoff is.
A standoff is a little plastic or metal piece that the motherboard goes on top of, and there are many of these, and they keep it about half an inch from the bottom of the case. Why would we want to do that?
Just a point. Mm-hmm. The metal ones are actually locks, they are not standoffs, and the metal ones are actually conductive, whereas the plastic ones are standoff and they are not conductive. But yeah,
they're both called standoffs in the book, though.
Yeah, I never said these notes were right.
No.
And this will be fixed in ITE 4.1, I would hope. Does anybody know why we'd want to keep the motherboard off the backplate in the case?
So that if you accidentally bump into the case, you're not bumping in right into the bottom of the board? I guess just give it that little bit of separation.
Think more...
Metal board on metal case.
That's him... So you don't get
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, we don't want metal on metal, I see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I did. I'm completely mic'd up. Oh, wow. I wonder what my... Okay, hold on just a second.
Grace will be right back. She's just really delayed to me. Like, there's about a second and a half delay, and I'm getting a 7-millisecond ping time to the server, so we're just...
Yeah, that's why I kept disconnecting. It was pretty crazy because I'd disconnect and I'd still hear Grace talking even though I was disconnected from the server for like half a minute. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there.
Hasn't unkeyed her at all though.
Oh, she's been talking all the time, has she?
Yeah, it hasn't unkeyed her.
On my end, she's not talking anymore.
She's disconnected.
I think she left the whole thing. But yeah, it never unkeyed her.
Yeah, she did.
I don't know if...
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Time to play with Vox.
I thought it was my internet.
No, I don't know what it is. It's really weird because I'm only seeing a ping of 11 to the server at the moment, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's why I kept disconnecting and reconnecting. I'd line things up because I'd be getting answers to the quiz questions like half a minute before the question was asked.
I was wondering what was going on with that.
We're just testing because Kieran's currently connected. Just give us a sec. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that doesn't take long.
I'm just going to make sure it unkeys her from time to time now.
Okay, testing. It's looping. I'm right there.
I think that's fixed.
Let's hope it is. I fixed my sensitivity, put it about 20, so maybe I'll cut out at some point.
That's better. Yeah, because if you don't cut out, it makes the recordings really long, and they get lots of... and the silence compression doesn't knock it out.
Oh, that's no good. Does anybody, I'm sure everybody knows, I love messing with my audio settings in Ventrilo so much. Oh my goodness. Not. Oh, thanks. Okay. They're not actually. Okay, so we want to mount it a little bit above the case with those standoffs and locks to prevent it from touching the case and having some big ol' electrical static discharge sparks and pretty light show, but your computer doesn't work anymore, so not that awesome. You should only install standoffs and locks that align with the holes in the motherboard. Installing any additional ones may prevent the motherboard from being seated properly in the computer case. Follow these steps to install it. You want to install the standoffs in the case first. Align the I/O connectors on the back of the motherboard with the opening in the back of the case. If you don't get it right the first time, do not despair. It's kind of tricky to do on some cases to line them up. You may actually want a little bit of help with that, but it is doable. Align the screw holes of the motherboard with the standoffs and insert all of the motherboard screws. Tighten all the motherboard screws up.
Just a point. I think you're actually supposed to put washers between the screws and the system board.
Depends on the case.
Yeah, don't they often have washers, though, on the lock screws?
That depends on the case.
It depends on the motherboard. We're just saying, sometimes the screws actually have the insulation on them, and we're also saying that sometimes the boards have got like a little lumpy solder thing that insulates them from the board. But we have actually had problems where people didn't use the washers and the screws just screwed straight into the board, and there were some tracks near the screws, and the screws would actually connect the tracks, which isn't good. They tend to fix that in the modern stuff.
I believe mine, when I did mine, had the built-in insulating on the screws, and you didn't have to screw with mine. But every board is different, and that's...
Yeah, she's cutting out now. Now the cutting out story.
She's not cutting out that badly, though.
No. It's not real bad, but...
My case is slightly odd, and then it's got, like, giant metal brackets, and then little pieces of plastic that are where the screw holes are on the end of. And I just don't understand why you couldn't just make it elastic or some non-conductive surface. So you don't, you know, then you wouldn't have to worry about it. Just put the screw holes in there.
So after this, at this point, you've got the installing the motherboard lab. You get to install the CPU and assembly and do the RAM and install the motherboard. So now once you've installed the motherboard into your case, you get to install the internal drives. These are usually your hard drives. A hard disk drive, HDD, is an example of an internal drive. And the following are the installation steps. Remember that a hard drive goes into a 3.5-inch bay. This is important because it's in your test. There's a question that asks you which two things go into a 3.5-inch bay. They're going to be your hard drive and your floppy drive. The CD drive goes into a 5.5-inch bay. They ask you about that as well in your test, so there you go. If you listen to that, you're going to get two questions automatically right. So to install the hard drive, you position it so that it aligns with 3.5-inch drive bay. Insert it into the drive bay so that the screw holes in the drive line up with the screw holes in the case, and secure the hard drive to the case using the proper screws. Lining up the screw holes can be fun, but it's doable, and you will get there. We're going to talk about drives that are installed in external bays, such as optical drives, DVD drive floppies. These external bays give you access to the drives from the front of the case. Optical drives and floppy drives store data on a removable media, which you all know. Telling you what an optical drive is, I think we know what optical drives do. A Molex power connector provides the optical drive with power from the power supply. A POTA cable is used to connect to the optical drive to the motherboard. The steps are pretty much the same as installing an optical drive as installing an internal hard drive, except you want to make sure that the optical drive's front lines up with the front of the outside of the case so that you can access it. Go ahead.
Just be very aware, guys. Molex and Berg are in your tests. You must know what a Molex is. You must know what a Berg is. The power connector names are in your test. The Berg is for a 3.5-inch floppy. The Molex is for optical drives, hard drives. And then, of course, now we've got SATA power. But do know the difference between a Molex and a Berg. And believe it or not, I didn't even know the little floppy one was called a Berg until I did ITE1. But there you go.
Yeah, we just called it the little floppy connector thing. but it is a Berg connector, which I was just about to say. It provides the floppy drive with power. And a floppy drive cable is used to connect the floppy drive to the motherboard. It fits into the 3.5-inch bay. So again, let me say this one more time, because it is in your test. And you'll get two questions automatically right if you know this. Hard drive and floppy drive go into 3.5-inch bays. Optical drive goes into a 5.5-inch bay. Very important. Two questions.
Isn't it 5.25? Isn't it 5 1/4?
Yes, 5. Yeah, it is 5 1/4.
You keep saying 5.5, and I'm like, wait, that's too big.
A lot of people write it as 5.25. You do see 5.25 quote, whereas you don't tend to write 5 1/4 because that doesn't tend to render in ASCII as easily. So
that's
you end up
true.
With 3.5 quote. And 5.25 quote. The quote many inches.
Yep.
Really?
That's why. So he had a big 5.25 quote floppy drive.
No, he didn't. That'd be a really big one. That'd be a...
That'd be too big for
drive.
That slot.
So if we've had an 8-inch floppy drive, you've really got problems.
Hey, I see.
I think back in the day they were computer.
I just couldn't let that one go.
Well, that's all good. Okay.
See, for the analogy, I actually have screwless designs, so I guess we can talk about that.
Okay.
No, I'm serious. The case doesn't have screws to put the drives in. It's actually really brilliant the way the hard drives work, because you just put little
My Dell's got rails.
You put little rails on the drive.
There's little
screw holes in, and then you put the rail on the drive, and then you just slide the drive, and the rail just snaps out. And then when you want to take it out, you just squeeze the thing and pull it out. It's the easiest thing ever.
Yeah, we've got the same with some of the cases.
My 2002 Dell is like that. Really old.
Okay, we're going to quickly go over installing adapter cards. They add functionality to a computer, such as wireless, or you can stick a card reader in, or you can put in a better sound card or video card, or a network adapter. It must be compatible with the expansion slot, so you want to look at the expansion slots you have and see which ones are in your computer. If you're not sure, if you're not sure, look at the motherboard manual and see which ones you have if you can't tell by feel, because you know what, sometimes you can't if you're not quite sure. You can get motherboard manuals in PDF from your manufacturer's website, usually.
And another quick point on there, if you can't read the PDF for some reason, and it doesn't work in Apple's Quick View or whatever it is, may I recommend some OCR software that you can run against the PDF, or you can use GoScript to dump it into JPEGs and then shovel it through QuertzFile or Abbey Fine Reader Pro if you can't afford QuertzFile.
PDF to TXT also is free, and it has some OCR software in it of some kind, I believe. I'm not sure. I haven't used it. I use Kurzweil, or I use Nuance PDF Converter.
The PDF to TXT, the OCR in it has never worked. Like it always just fails to read it, and then gives me some really strange error message I've never seen before.
Yeah, it is open source OCR. It's not very good. I think it's the Socrates engine from Google.
Yeah.
There you have it. That's why I haven't tried it. Okay, we're going to talk about three types of adapter cards quickly. We've got a PCIe 1 NIC card, network interface card, enables computer to connect to a wired network. NICs use PCI and PCIe expansion slots on a motherboard. We'll talk about a PCI wireless NIC. It enables you to connect a wireless network. Wireless NICs use PCI and PCIe Express slots on the motherboard. And some wireless NICs are installed externally with a USB connector. Yep, we've all seen the wireless dongles, right?
There are also wireless cards that actually have a big long lead and a big box. Also be aware that there are advantages to wireless cards that are USB because sometimes opening the case will void the warranty and often you want to add network functionality to your computer without voiding your warranty.
And you can take them with you to any other computer you go to.
Good point about opening up the case. I hadn't thought about that.
That's right, because sometimes you've got those little stickers over the back that say warranty void if removed, and if you break those stickers, then obviously the warranty is void and they'll tend to argue with you if you try and get it fixed under warranty.
So that's what those stickers say. I didn't know they were warranties.
A lot of times, yes.
Do not remove this tag under the law.
No, they say, Sean H, ha ha ha, you can't read this. No, they don't.
No, you're blind. That converts into the Windows XP or 98 or whatever key it is on the side.
Ah, now there's a point. You should always get somebody to read that key off, because eventually the stickers will become unreadable, and you won't be able to read the key off, and you won't be able to reinstall. And sometimes the key written on the sticker actually differs from the key in your machine, which you could retrieve with Windows Jelly Bean Key Finder. So you might want both keys.
Cool, 2 for 1.
Absolutely. PC... we're talking about a PC Express X16 video card. These are really, really short slots, actually.
Actually, the slot length differs depending on whether it's a 1, 2, 4, 8, or 16 slot.
The 16s are the really short ones.
No, they're actually quite long because they're at the top of my system board and they look a bit like AGP except they're inverted.
The ones are shorter.
Yeah, so we can just disagree on this and we'll look it up on Wikipedia later.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are different sizes depending on the speed of the slot.
The 1, 2, 4s and 16s are different different lengths, and the 16s were the really short ones.
No, the 1s are the really short ones.
Okay.
Because you don't need as many pins to shovel it at one speed. You need more pins to shovel it at 16 because you need more simultaneous conductors to shovel the stuff across the bus, which is why the 16s are longer than the 1s.
All right. Cool. A video card adapter is the interface between the computer and the display monitor. An upgraded video adapter card can provide better graphics capabilities for games and graphic programs.
And it can also make JAWS go faster.
Yay for JAWS going faster.
Really?
Well, because if Windows is taking time to actually write stuff onto the screen because you've got a slow video card, it slows the whole machine down. So if you've got a faster video card, JAWS will be snappier.
Oh.
Denigrated
video card might have its own processor and memory and all that good stuff.
Same would hold for... Well, NVDA would still slow the whole machine down with a slow video card, so NVDA would still it'd be helped by a faster video card. And anybody who hasn't gone into their control panel and turned off all the visual effects, go try that later.
You should probably do that. Your computer will run so much faster.
Integrated graphics cards are also just a memory.
Integrated graphic cards... what?
Integrated graphics chips will also... Oh, well, I don't know why now. It steals your RAM, the integrated motherboard graphics chip things.
Yes, and there is a setting in the BIOS, which you can get to with sighted assistance, that you can actually limit the size of the frame buffer. And I would recommend that if you're not going to run high resolutions, just give it 16 meg instead of 64. And whilst it is true that the embedded memory cards that used to exist in computers would reduce the overall system bandwidth, this is no longer the case. It doesn't actually slow the whole thing down as it used to in the first generation onboard stuff.
Okay, video cards. This is important for... one of the tests, at least, use PCI, AGP, and PCIe expansion slots on the motherboard, but now they pretty much use the PCIe slots. When installing adapter cards, make sure that you are using an anti-static wrist strap to prevent damage to it. Always hold the card by the edges so that you do not damage the components or leave moisture on the card. The following are the steps to install adapter cards, and they're all pretty much installed the same way. Align the NIC to the appropriate slot on the motherboard.
First of all, you want to remove the slot bracket and the retaining screw. Just mentioning that. Then go on, Grace.
if you've got one on a new computer, you will have the slot and retaining screw. And if you get a really cheap case, you might not even get a retaining screw on the actual slot bracket. It's just a thing that you break off, and once you break it off, you dispose of it. You try not to get a case with that that feature, because you can't put the slot bracket on back again.
Also be aware that if you leave slot brackets off your computer, stuff can get in through the cracks, and you will literally end up with bugs in your computers.
And I really don't want to be cheap and put masking tape over it, but I guess you can if you must, and you've bought a case like that.
There was actually this snake that actually crawled into this computer through a power supply, and it was in where it was all nice and warm and everything, and it made this horrible grinding noise when they turned it on, and when they actually opened it up, there was a snake
in there.
Disgusting!
I think I would
nice
never work on another computer if that happened.
Oh, God, imagine reaching your hands in to pull that thing out. Ew!
As I keep telling people, I had some cockroaches living in my Mac. And they liked it because it was nice and warm.
Yeah, for how long? I've got screwless brackets also.
Yeah.
I find they don't hold in as well.
They're really easy to break off, and then they're pointless. Yeah, I just break the little, you know, levers, because I'll easily move them the wrong way and just go snap.
Yeah. Speaking of cockroaches, I heard a story about somebody who had cockroaches living in her Braille display, and got when her Braille display went and got repaired, there was a cockroach infestation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you tend to find them in all sorts of places. You get them in pubs and stuff because they like the beer, the dried up beer in the cash registers and stuff. So it's pretty common. Anyway, back to the lecture. We'd like you all to sleep tonight.
Yeah. And not be afraid to do the labs. When you open up the computer, you won't find scorpions and cockroaches and snakes in there.
That would be one buggy lab.
Oh, okay. We'll just move on. So we align the card with the appropriate slot on the motherboard. We press down gently on the NIC until the card is seated, and we secure the NIC or whatever card into the PC mounting bracket to the case with the appropriate screw. So you have an activity on installing cards, lab activity.
Listen to the audio lab.
Yeah, I refer you to the audio lab. What time do we have?
It's 10:49.
All right, we'll just scream through this.
Ugh.
Well. So now we are going to, now that we've put in all the cards, we're going to connect up all the cables. You will probably want some assistance in connecting up your front panel cables headers to the motherboard. You can do it by trial and error, but if you can just get a sighted person to help you, you're going to have a much easier time of it. The instructions for where these connect up are in your manual or on your manufacturer's website where you download the motherboard manual.
Don't lose the little piece of paper that comes with the case that tells you what all the wires do, because you will have trouble working it out.
All right. You've got power cables. Just like other components, your motherboard needs power to operate, which will provide power to everything or a lot of the other things. The ATX main power connector will have either 20 or 24 pins. The power supply may also have a 4-pin or 6-pin auxiliary power connector, also called AUX, that's in your final, to connect to the motherboard. A 20-pin connector will work in a motherboard with a 24-pin socket. And to install the motherboard power cable, align the 20 or 24-pin ATX power connector to the socket on the motherboard. Gently press down on the connector until the clip clicks into place. Okay.
Isn't there converters for 20 to 24? Because, because that, you just said it would work if you just put 20 pins in, but my experience is you do need power on the other 4 pins.
No, apparently it will work. I bought a 20 to 24 pin converter for mine, but apparently it'll go. You're not going to get as much power out of it, though.
Yeah, the notes say it'll work, but...
Hmm. AMD users, be warned.
Well, it'll work.
And Intel ones, be warned, there's often another auxiliary power connector up near the CPU, and if you don't hook that up, and you've got one of those funky talking Asus boards like I had, it goes, system failed CPU check! System failed CPU check! So make sure you plug that in.
Wow.
Yeah, it actually talks messages.
That is sweet!
Yeah, you turn it on and it goes, system starting post! Yeah.
That's cool!
And it's awesome.
Apparently you can change the voice. You can actually change voice.
If I
you
had
actually...
one scare me to death.
System failed CPU check.
It scared me. It was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
They are a bit scary.
AMD's have that same power connector.
Well, the Intel one is different to the AMD, and they are not compatible.
Surprising.
And they just beep twice at you.
Yeah, or well, they just don't come up at all. But yeah, we spent like a day or two trying to figure out why this machine wouldn't work, and then I'm just like, what's this dangling power connector, which I'd asked for about the 20th time, and he went, oh, I think that plugs in up here. Oh. So he plugged it in and up it came.
I've come very close to doing similar.
Okay, you want to push this rather gently, but honestly, I've had experiences where you think it's plugged in and it's not because you pressed a little too gently, and girl with tiny hands. So, not...
Never had that problem.
That, yeah, well... so not that gently, guys. If you've got it lined up, you want to give it a decent push. I mean, don't slam it in there, but you do want to give these quite a good push, or else they're not going to lock in.
You should actually hear it click in. You'll actually hear the thing on the side go click, and then when you pull on it gently, it will not come straight out of the socket. So that's how you can tell. You can also feel the clip on the side, and you'll feel the clip is actually sort of more latched in than it normally is, and that will show you that it's actually pushed in all the way.
That auxiliary connector that Carrie was talking about, the AUX, up near the CPU, you align that and plug it in. And I hit my whiz wheel and lose my place.
While Grace finds her place.
There we go, found it.
You should turn the whiz wheels off.
Oh, yeah, but it's...
Yeah, but your braille light's your braille sense is broken, so I don't expect to see it for about 4 weeks. I'll understand if you turn the whiz wheels off, I promise.
I should, too.
Anyway, do it after lecture.
All right, yeah, I will.
While you wait for Grace to scroll...
There we go. Got it.
Why don't you think about why beer shouldn't be a part of your next PC assembly project? Beer and PCs. No beer is a good idea.
Oh, rum and coke PC
this
assembly.
This message brought to you by the Anti-Booze Council.
I thought you were going to say something about beer and breakfast online or something. But that's about the same.
So we clip that into place, and you've got power connector installed. We are going to quickly talk about other power connectors. SATA power connector uses a 15-pin connector. The SATA power connectors are used to connect hard drives and optical drives to power, or any device that has a SATA power socket, yeah. Molex power connectors are used by hard disk drives and optical drives that do not have a SATA power socket. They're very important. Don't use a SATA connector and a Molex connector on the same drive at the same time. Bad things will happen. We've got a 4-pin Berg. Go ahead.
No, go on with the 4-pin Berg.
4-pin Berg connector supplies power to a floppy drive. 4-pin Berg connector supplies power to the floppy drive in your test. Connect the power cables. And there are actual steps here. Do we really need to tell you the steps on how to connect power cables? You want
just
to
one small point. Both Bergs and Molexes will go in upside down if you force them hard enough. And may I suggest that putting 5 volts onto a 12-volt line is not so cool, but putting 12 volts onto a 5-volt line is even less cool, and the smoke will come out of your computer, and it will not work again. Bang! Okay?
Almost did it.
Yeah, it can blow up a whole motherboard. Just keep in mind that there are little corners that are cut off one side of the molecs, and if you push them in, they'll go in easily one way and not so easily the other. So the not so easily way is not the way you want, okay? And some of the soft ones can actually go in both ways. They're quite nasty.
They're usually, the new ones are keyed, and if you buy decent cables, they're keyed pretty well.
Yes, that's if you buy decent cables.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually get them in the other way, and some of them do have sort of a softish sort of plastic on them, and they will actually go in the other way. And I've actually seen people put floppy connectors in up the wrong way as well, the Berg ones. Wow. Bang. And no computer and a new power supply and a dead floppy drive.
We're going to talk about data cables. Data cables are fine. Potter. Yeah, the cables. The end of it might not be so fine. We're going to talk about Potter, solder, and floppy disks. The Potter cable is sometimes called a ribbon cable because it's flat. It feels like one of those ribbons that you won at the three-legged race at your Sunday church picnic when you were like... they're wide and flat. Potter cables can either have 40 or 80 conductors. Now they have 80, basically, as a general rule. Potter cables usually have 3 40-pin connectors. One connector at one end of the cable connects to the motherboard. The other two connectors connect to drives. If multiple hard drives are installed, this is on your test, the master will be connected to the end of the connector. The slave drive will connect to the middle connector. A stripe on the data cable will denote pin 1. They should be keyed, so you should be able to tell which way they go in, but you can put them in backwards if you try hard enough. So if it goes in, you want to make sure it goes in easily and it's keyed correctly, and you'll be good. Plug the Potter cable into the drive with the pin 1 indicator on the cable aligned with pin 1 indicator on the drive connector. The pin 1 indicator on drive connector is usually closest to the power connector on the drive. Many motherboards have two Potter drive controllers. This provides support for a maximum of 4 Potter drives. So now we're going to talk about the SATA data cables. Anyone know how many pins a SATA data cable has in like 3 of your
7
tests? Yes! Thank you! 7.
6. Off by
7.
Off by 1 and I lose everything.
The other end is connected to any drive that has a SATA data connector. Connect the data cable and plug it in. The floppy data cable has 34 pins. Like the Potter data cable, the floppy drive data cable has a stripe to denote the location of pin 1. A floppy drive cable usually has 3 34-pin connectors, and one connector at the end of the cable connects to the motherboard. The other two connectors connect to the drives. The middle one is slave, then there's a twist in the cable, and then there is the master drive on the other end. So you connect the master drive to the end with a twist in the cable. You plug the drive in. These are also usually keyed as well, but I did almost plug one in wrong as well. If you plug in a floppy drive and you plug it in backwards, it's not going to hurt the drive. You're just going to have the activity light on the drive on constantly, and the drive will not work. So you want to turn the computer off, turn it around, and plug the cable back in the right way.
Just a warning, however, that the light for the drive will stay on, the motor will spin, and it will blank track 0 of any disk you have in the drive. So if that's your boot disk, it will no longer be a boot disk.
But I believe in one of the finals, there's a question about the activity light being on the problem. So that is the problem. If that happens, you've got the cable round the wrong way. Okay. I think we'll quickly go over BIOS next week, because it is 11:02, and we'll have our quiz, and we'll go on to Chapter 4, where you guys start to learn about the troubleshooting process.
Okie dokie. Anybody got any questions before we disappear? We've got a leadership meeting at 11:30, which is why we're keen to bail out of here and get some food before we come back for the leadership meeting.
I guess he doesn't have any questions.
Nope, I'm good.
I'm not quite sure how the labs and stuff are going to work, but I guess I can ask those questions on email as they come up, because I'm not really sure.
Please have a listen to the audio labs, and then you may have less questions.
There are going to be some questions. It'll ask where, there's one I can think of right off the bat, where it asks which slot a video card goes into. I've just said it in this lecture, and it's in your notes. It doesn't say in the audio lab, but it is readily available. Look back in your notes, listen to the lecture, and you'll be able to write things such as that down.
Depends on the adapter card, right?
Yeah. but you can find out what type of slot that adapter card might go into. If you're not sure of an answer to something, if you research it or have a look at your computer or think about it a little bit, if the answer sounds even right and it's different, if you're like looking at your computer and say you put down how many screws are in your power supply, that's okay. Any other lab questions? All right. Well, if anyone needs any help with labs or anything else, we'll be on Skype or email later.